Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, August 28th.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll hear from three panelists about the marketplace. They include Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services. He's located in Oakland, Illinois. Sherman Newlin from Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois. And Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Let's start off with your list, and Scott Harms, maybe we'll start with you. What's on your list of notable notes for the weeks and things you'd like to talk about?
Well, I guess I was somewhat impressed with the way the corn market held together, and I think that we could be talking about corn relatively close to lows, and soybeans not so much, so perhaps it's time for the corn-soybean ratio to start to be more aggressively corrected from the historically wide levels.
And Sherman Newlin?
What was on our radar here recently was the Russian and Ukrainian situation and what that could do to the wheat market and whether we're putting in a short-term low in the wheat and whether that can help, you know, pull some corn up a little bit. Maybe we've got the biggest yields priced into this corn market here for a little while. Till next week anyway, see what WASDE numbers show.
That's right. And then Pete Manhart.
Harvest early or late or normal dates and disease and beans and then storage and usage.
Let's start off with that one, in fact. Pete, what do you think about storage and usage and what producers ought to be considering at this point?
Well, usage is great on both corn and beans. Low prices helped usage be higher. Storage is going to be a problem most places. And because of that, I'd be looking at selling cash and using the money you'd spent for storage to buy calls later when we think we're in lows in mid-harvest.
Sherman, you have thoughts on usage and consumption for corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Well, I think that's going to continue to be good. I mean, on what Pete was saying as far as the storage and everything, I think that's going to be a problem also. I think farmers are going to probably need to try and get out there when they can and you know, get to the elevator with what they can, and then bins are at least empty for a while, and those will get filled up, and then there's going to be a problem with what we're going to do with the crop, which will eventually affect the basis.
Scott, you're located part of the week there in Oakland at the elevator. I suspect you've been having some conversations with the elevator manager about storage and availability and how they expect to handle such a large corn harvest locally. What have you learned? What do you think about this marketplace?
Last year, the area in our particular area had a pretty good size production, and I think they were anticipating a lot more corn coming across the scales. But I think the immediate need for corn was pretty strong, and the on-farm storage that has been built up over the last several years, it really hasn't been put into real strong use over the last couple of years, especially the short year we had, short crop we had a couple of years ago, is going to be utilized and then some. So he's, you know, certainly prepared for a big crop to come across the scales, but I'm sure that the producers are quite comfortable squirreling away as much as they can. But again, you know, going back to Pete's point, the basis is going to be a problem. We know that there are going to be transportation issues this fall that is going to put some pressure on basis and pricing it, especially if you're in an area where there is a decent basis. You see an uptick at any time. I think, and especially if you're not at the 50 or 60% priced level, and as we understand, a lot of producers aren't very heavily priced, those are the reports, go ahead and move a little inventory and use a break into this fall as, you know, to re-own it on paper, because the basis could be pretty painful for a period of time this fall.
Well, there is a note I want to follow up with all of you, and maybe you can just jump in on this. How far along do you think producers really are on sales for the new crop corn, because this will make a big difference over time as to what happens. And I've been out on these farm credit meetings over the last couple of days, and we'll be doing some more with Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas, learning about ARC and PLC. But the national average cash price, which producers are actually going to start really paying attention to in the WASDE reports once they figure out their directly related to some payments that will come from the ARC program. And are they front-loaded on this, or have they not sold as much as they usually do? And what does that all mean, do you think?
I think that, you know, what's being reported by the trade, you hear a lot of numbers bandied about, it's just 15 to 20% sold. And I think those numbers are awfully low. I would say what we're hearing, and some of our customers, certainly not as heavily sold as they want to be, especially given where prices have fallen from, but I'd say closer to 30% priced, in the corn market, probably a little more aggressively in beans.
I think it varies depending on, you know, who the farmer is and how comfortable they were with forward pricing and with everything. Some have done a, you know, pretty good job, but I think overall probably across a good midsection of everywhere, probably not as far along as they would like to be with cash sales anyway.
I think that's a thing that has to do with price. When you have low prices, you're not as, and you had the opportunity to sell higher, you don't have as much sold as you wish you did. I think that's part of it. I think we didn't get as much sold early because, you know, the prices weren't as good as they had been in the past. So, but I've got guys that are 80 to 100% sold in both corn and beans, but I've got people that have sold zero in corn and beans. So it's really, basis by basis based on an individual, but I think in general, elevators have not as much booked as normal, and I think that has to do with when you have lower prices, people tend to wait and think, oh, it'll come back later, and I don't know that that's going to happen for 2 years.
Well, I was just going to add that another factor, and producers for the last couple of years have been complacency or at least procrastination as far as marketing is concerned has paid off quite handsomely for them. Selling early has not been the way to go the last couple of years, especially in 2012 when we had such a short crop. So, you know, the recent trend toward marketing, we haven't had a year like this in a while where we put in our highs early in the season and just saw spectacular weather and prices in a decline. So I think you can give a lot of producers a pass on if they're not as quite as sold as what they've been in the past.
I was just going to add on top of that, I mean, they're going to have more corn bushels probably to sell this year than they're expecting anyway with the higher yields. So that means they're just not quite as far along on their sales, you know, from that aspect anyway. But, you know, we've been preaching, you know, all winter and summer long to get, you know, hedged up somewhat one way or the other, and some have, and some haven't done quite so well.
I think it's important to note at this point that in the last WASDE report, USDA put the national average cash price for corn at $3.90 for the midpoint. That's above where we are at this point, certainly. So I want to relate this discussion we've just had to that particular item. What it will look like in the September report. And remember, we're at 1.8 billion bushels for our carryout, and we have a 14 billion bushel crop, a big one. Now it's 167.4. It might get bigger, I suppose. But I want to relate it all to whether we think the corn lows are in or close to being in, or whether we have, and this would be on the Nash for the cash price. I know it'll differ locally, but not the futures price, but for the cash prices. Do you think we have come through the worst of this yet, or do we have a lot more left to do on the bottom side? And this will go to what producers think about storage, whether that be in the elevator or in the bin. Who wants to take that one up?
I think that we've seen the low for a while, but I think we get into mid-harvest and find out how big the crop is, we will actually go to that 320 area on the board instead of where we're at, the 360 to 370 area. If you look at the last week, we had a 58 low and last month, 58 low and what, an 81 high, and we just back and forth. I think that's going to continue until we actually do see what the yields will be. And if we have these big yields they're talking about, I think we'll see new lows mid-October to the 1st of November, and that's when I would be looking to buy calls for it to bounce back. But I would be looking to have, even as bad as the prices are right now, I would be looking to, you know, unload it, because I think we got another 40 down on corn easily. And I think beans, you talk to lots of industry, they're talking 950 on the board. We're at 1030 right now.
Yeah, I think, of course, any conversation about lows and timing of lows has to be couched by what ultimately the yield is going to be. But seasonally, we tend to, you know, through September through East, as far as the seasonal lows, a lot of times we make our lows either in September or December. We rarely make lows in August, so I certainly would suspect that the lows at 358 could very well be tested, perhaps right around that September report. But I guess, you know, we're looking for a lower acreage number coming in the October report. If you believe, you know, the acreage is 2 million acres too high, then, you know, you're probably going to have to be looking at a 172.5 yield in order to push prices much lower than the 350 level. So I guess in 2009, the last time we had a record crop, we made our low, we all know, in early September. And I guess we're looking for, you know, something similar this year. Perhaps the September 11th report, you know, would be the most accurate we have to date. And then with an anticipation of a lower acreage number coming down the pike, that perhaps the lows could be put in around that September report. So I'll push the date up a little bit instead of November, probably into that September report time.
I'd agree we're saying, I mean, just from those aspects that they pointed out. I mean, I'm not going to try and pinpoint the time period on it, trying to be that exact. I feel like, you know, we probably will test those lows again at some point in time once we start hearing how some of these yields are going to be coming in. And, you know, that's in regards to what the USDA is going to say here in the next report. I mean, if they confirm or say we're going to have a bigger yield, then, you know, then we'll probably test the lows. And then if we get the combines rolling and see that we actually have some good yields out there, like the reporting coming in from the southern areas, I imagine we'll probably break the new lows. You know, I'm not overly bearish. I think, you know, maybe 330, 340 in that area. But I'm like, you know, like Pete was saying, that somewhere down in there, we want to start buying some of this corn back.
I have a question on harvest. Are you going to have anything harvested in your area by the September 1st deadline? Well, that's next week. But by the September 12th report, will you have anything harvested as far as having yields in your area, or will we just still be talking about the things that came out today, Louisiana and Mississippi, from one outfit saying 170 to 230 corn and 65 to 85 beans?
No, we won't be harvesting anything that time frame. Everything's going to be here late. I mean, the earliest beans will probably be harvested late September. Most corn probably won't be started until then or after into the October time frame. So to get a good feel for yield, it's going to still be probably 30 days away from, you know, Illinois, Indiana combines running any.
Well, that's what I was looking at for October.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would agree. As far as harvest results, you're gonna have to wait until October, November report. When I, with the September report, we are gonna get the ear weights, and we know that is the component that you know, drove to record yields and drove the yields higher in 2009. And so we are gonna have likely that information available for the September report. And once the market becomes comfortable, I guess my argument is once the market becomes comfortable with that being close to the highest yield that they're going to see, close to the highest carryout number that they're going to see, then you know, the market will feel comfortable at the lows, you know, putting lows in around that time. It may be a spike low, you know, into new lows, but we're anticipating that you know, the largest production number may come in around close to that September report.
It very well could be. I mean, we've been saying that, you know, this weather we've been having, it sure has been adding test weight to these ears. I mean, the ears that we've been, you know, checking, the field tests and everything, they're heavy. It's going to make a difference on some of the bushels that are out there. Like you were saying earlier, I think, you know, the acreage could be the big changer. You know, if we drop a million acres on the corn, you know, that's going to end up, I mean, you can raise your yield to 170, 171, but it's your final carryout number that really matters.
you know. And I'd like to ask you guys, I talked to a customer, if you have any good contacts in Minnesota, I talked to a customer today, they're used to producing 200 bushel corn, and he just had it yield checked by his agronomist, and they think it's going to be closer to 165.
I agree.
The cool early wet weather in the spring, and then the cool summer, they think really have impacted yields in that area.
I talked to one of my clients this morning from Minnesota, and we had that discussion. He said the top end yield of their corn is not there. He said 160, 165. He said that they have recently been getting some pretty good rains here in the last week, 2 weeks, and more slated, today and this coming weekend, and it's made a big difference on their beans. He said it's really added some bushels to their bean crop. But he thinks it's going to be above average on their beans. But, corn is, he questions it, and he's just not going to be quite as good.
But are you hearing from customers, though, about the 2 to 210 to 220 to 230 that's all over Illinois?
Yeah.
Even deep south?
I know some guys in central southern Illinois that they've got some ground that just didn't catch the rain in time. So there's some dry spots. I mean, they've got ground that probably won't average over 100 bushel on part of their farms.
Well, that happens every year in places.
Yeah.
But in general, like through here, we've had this Elverdew test, that Elverdew test, pro farmer do things. And we've got that. I've got that all the way from below Interstate 70 to northern Illinois. And they're talking yields 220 to 230. 210 to 240 as far as averages for the area, but whole farm averages, not a field average. And that's 20 to 30 above where USDA was on their numbers.
Right. No, I mean, we're seeing some of that too. I mean, but how's that going to play out, compared to the corn that's in Minnesota and North Dakota and South Dakota, with their drawdown over in those areas. I mean, you still got to look at the national carryout.
Oh, yeah, we're looking at national, but the 170 to 230 in Mississippi and those areas, is that going to help make up for the Minnesota, Dakotas?
It very well can.
I don't know.
I mean, they're having tremendous bean yields down there, too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is with prices at the current levels, this 370 level in these corn, I don't think we were ever really trading that 167.5, the USDA number. Going into that report, it came in below expectations. The market really didn't show much reaction to it because we were already trading a 170 yield. I guess, in my opinion, we're already trading a 171 or so. So that 167.5 bushel acre yield the USDA gave us last month or earlier this month, to me, was already outdated and certainly below where the market was trading.
You don't think the market's traded down to the 167.5 at all? So the numbers we've looked at,
not really,
all along.
I believe the market discounted a 167.5 yield when it was trading $4.
I do too.
The fact that we went into the report below $4, I think we were probably around 370 when we went into the report, told us that the market was ahead of the USDA. The USDA will catch up unless there's a problem with cold weather and the crop goes backwards from here on.
I got a question on the acres. Where do you think we're going to lose the acres at, or gain acres, or whatever, corn, beans, whatever?
I think it's going to be across the board. We were, in the June report, we were surprised that we were anticipating it dropping to 90 million acres in the June report. And, a lot of ADM has a lot of elevator, they do a survey every year from their contacts, and they anticipated the 2 million or 1 to 2 million acre bump in soybean acres in the month of, in that June report. What they didn't anticipate was that the corn acres were going to be left unchanged. So I think it was just an overall shift, whether it was the late plantings in June that didn't get factored into the June acreage numbers, but I think it's an overall adjustment across the Midwest that we just didn't plant as much corn as what the USDA said in that June report.
Well, the seed corn guys were trying to tell you that, in one aspect, that they just didn't sell enough seed corn to plant that many acres. So, with the weather situations a lot of the places had, I mean, there's going to be more than likely, less harvested acres.
Another thing that's been on the list, and I'll have you take this up, Sherm, because it was on your list. It was Russia, Ukraine, wheat in particular, and both are related to lows potentially in the corn market. How are they related, and what do you think about wheat?
Well, I think that, yeah, they're definitely related. I mean, we've been, even last this week, we were, you know, kind of talking about a low in the wheat market, not really want to sell it, you know, actually taking some positions back to the long side in the wheat market. And then lo and behold, you know, Russia is supposedly invading Ukraine, and that's where we got our big jump today. And once December wheat got above that 50-day moving average, it advanced pretty quickly. We had a high volume trade today in the wheat market, one of the highest days we've had for quite some time. And, you know, we closed right on that 50-day, maybe slightly above it. You know, and if it can hold and continue to build on this situation that's over there, you know, that's just a knee-jerk reaction today, but maybe we're trying to build some sort of base. And, you know, and if they run into a more military situation over there to where that's going to affect their exports, or at least presumed to maybe affect their exports over there, that may push a little more business our way. And if we can bottom a little bit and start to work its way higher, then, you know, that'll help the corn market come along too, and maybe we've sort of put in a low in this corn market.
I just need to reiterate that the Ukraine thing has brought the wheat up two or three different times in the last month.
It's
we
true.
Had, what, 620, went mm-hmm. back to 580, back up to 612 today. So it's really been a big factor in raising wheat prices, because that's one of their main exports over there. And if they really get into a worse war-type situation, that exports that come out of those areas, which are huge in the world, people are worried about that getting smaller. Thus, our wheat would then be back in the market.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the the Ukrainian issue is—it's certainly not bearish, and the level of bullishness. There's certainly some Ukrainian Russian premium in this wheat market already, you know, given its premium to corn values. Probably the most friendly reason it's most friendly for wheat market is the fact that funds have such a heavy short position in the wheat. So it's going to be the first to react, not only from, like, as you know, Sherm said, from a volume standpoint. But that's where more majority of the fund positions are, and so they'll go through periods of liquidation like we saw today. And, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to get the acute, huge rally that we saw when this first came onto the scene in late February, early March, because we've had such a big crop, and we've had decent crop in wheat, and we've had expectations of a big crop in corn, and you're just not going to get that kind of bullish reaction. Because we can make up the difference if there's a slowdown in exports in that area of the world.
Another item that's on the list, the corn-to-soybean ratio. I think, Sherman, that was dropped out by you as well. That's been changing.
Yes, it has been. I know I wasn't the one that actually said it, but, yeah, it has been changing. And we look for that to probably come back together even more so with the way these bean yields could actually end up. Maybe, you know, ratcheting up. I mean, most in the industry are looking at a 45.5 type yield with a 400 plus million bushel carryout. The one thing I do want to mention on the bean side of it, though, is this old crop carryout. You know, where they said it's 140 million bushels, but you know, it seems like the you know, the trade's having a hard time finding cash beans out there to go and get and bid up out of the farmer's hands. We're wondering, you know, if that number is a lot lower than that, and some of these early beans that are going to come in here are going to be vacuumed into that naturally, so where maybe our carryout actually won't be quite that big as far as old crop beans go over that 400 million bushel area.
Yeah, so old crop carryout at 140 may be lower, and consequently it could be that the new crop at 430 million could be lower for next year as well. That's what you're trying to get to, right?
Well, yeah, that's what we're thinking.
You know, if that number is really more like 100, so we use 40 or 50 of this year's crop, so that lowers next year's. And I mean, I think that's reality, that they don't let the number go below somewhere just so to control things.
Well, in reality, it's the way the market's acting, it's almost zero.
Well, and the way USDA deals with that is that they move new crop supplies. They say new crop supplies were used, and old crop supplies stay the same. But they may end up with a 140, depending on what the S&D sheets and the grain stocks actually at the end of the year, say, in this last quarter, right? So they can get that they can get the soybean balance correct by the time they get to the grain stocks report. But they'll move the new crop into the old crop, and then they'll drop the new crop ending stocks by that number. So it'll be interesting to watch and see how that happens. Scott, I think actually it was you who came with the corn-soybean ratio.
Yeah, I think it's time for that ratio to start to narrow up. We have the bean market perhaps being artificially propped up by, crop waiting to get to maturity. We wanted to see these rains move across. I guess, the lot in the trade analysts are surprised that it's holding together as well as it is. One of the features is new crop soybean meal demand. It has been, it's almost four times what it normally is for this time of year. So we're seeing some strong demand in the meal side of the equation. If we start to see a slowdown on that front, or perhaps shipments not necessarily keeping up with the sales expectations, we start to see some slippage there. That might be, the next move, create the next move lower for soybeans. But just as we think corn is near their lows, or perhaps the lows are in, or the lows could be made in early sometime in September, the soybean market could, if it makes it to maturity without many issues, could have as much as 75 cents to a dollar downside to it. So that's where our attention is as far as marketing goes, is on new crop beans and new crop for beans for both 2014 and 2015, and watching for re-ownership strategies for the corn market.
And most of the analysts we talk to are concerned about both crop years, in particular this crop year, and making sales still, despite the fact that we've lost, a dollar and some since May in the new crop soybean price, that this price, and we're standing on this Thursday afternoon at, 10:28 or something like that, still remains a pretty strong price for the 2014 crop. Is that where everybody lands? And, Pete, are you in that boat?
I am. We've been selling 15 crop for a long time. If you look at the last month, when the first Ukraine thing happened, what did we go to, 11.18? Here we are, 10.28. That's 90 cents in a month. I still think we're back and forth a ways, but I think the beans have a big downward yet possibility. I think you have to protect for that. I think the corn, we're basically sideways, like we said, but I think once harvest happens and we find how big is big, we could see new lows and everything, and I agree with that 75 to a dollar lower on the beans.
Yeah, I mean, we're thinking along those type of lines. I mean, we've been, getting guys hedged for 2015 for quite a while, especially on paper. I mean, we're not really doing a lot in the cash side of it because we want to remain flexible, but we see a big yield coming. We see South America planting big acres. They're supposed to have a record crop. I don't know how you can predict that already, but they're supposed to have a big bean acres and big crop down there. And then with the prices where they are, I mean, if corn prices don't come up a bunch, we expect quite a few bean acres planted here in the U.S. next year. So we're really trying to push, at least on paper, the November 15 bean crop sales. There's nothing wrong with putting something in through here in case we do go down some more.
Well, I just think it's, just to add to that point, from a producer standpoint, paper is probably the best way to have yourself hedged. Is you're just going to feel more comfortable over the next, as we go into the growing season in South America, finishing off this year's crop, I think you're going to be more comfortable being short beans than not in one form or another.
So let's kind of wrap this up. And I think as I've listened to you, Pete, you may be the least optimistic of the three. Am I getting that drift correctly? Is that right, Pete, do you think?
I am for this year's prices. I think the current corn is sideways, but I think once we see harvest, I think the crop is bigger than most people think, and I think we'll see new lows on corn. On beans, I'm in agreement of another dollar down. I'm ready, though, to replace sales with re-ownership. I mean, I'm ready to sell everything now and re-own it when we see lows down the road. So that's for this year, and I think we need to protect against 15. I know guys that have got half of 15 sold, either cash and or futures, and I'm surprised how elevators are willing to buy cash for 15 at about the same basis that they have now for this year.
Scott, your positions?
Well, we're not necessarily bullish corn from these price levels. It's more of a neutral stance, but you know, the downside, I think, has been largely played out. There may be one more push lower, so we're going to use that perhaps as an opportunity to unwind some hedges or look to do some re-ownership strategies sometime here in early September. You know, the market's getting complacent with large production numbers, and that's just the time that we start to see some uptick in demand. So we're anticipating, you know, perhaps, you know, decent demand start to show up at these levels. Beans, you have to get something hedged. And, you know, it's not that you have to get married to the fact that you're selling November 15 beans at 1040. Look at a hedge. It's just going to be, you're going to be more comfortable being hedged than not over the next few months in beans. And so that's where we're at. More of a neutral stance in corn, but definitely a negative bias in beans.
Dan Sherm.
Yeah, we're in along those lines, too. I mean, we feel like, you know, maybe we've priced in the biggest yield number in this corn market, but we're still not, you know, thinking that the market still can't go down some more. As the market goes down, we're going to be trying to get out of our hedges more than likely. We've been long bought puts for a long, long time, and we're going to look to take those off. And at some point in time, you know, look to probably try to buy back into this market, especially if you've had to make some sales. New crop corn, we're not overly hedged on right now. We feel like there's probably going to be a play somewhere down the line in the aspect that we look for less corn acres next year by a substantial amount. You know, we're going to be anywhere from 86 to 88 million planted acreage area next year. The guys up north more than likely aren't going to plant near as many acres in corn, and the guys down south are acting like they're going to plant more cotton and soybeans. So there could be something there. But and beans, kind of the same way. I mean, I still want to have protection on for beans. And, you know, if we could get a bounce in through here for whatever reason, and you've got some good-looking beans, we'd go ahead and make some more forward cash contract sales for old beans. And look to get some hedges on that 2015 market.
One final note from me for today's program. I've been out on the road with Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas, some of the brokers at Farm Credit Illinois meetings, a couple of them in the past week, and we'll be out in the next 3 weeks at several other places. If you have the opportunity, please do check out our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our Outlook meeting schedule. It's a link over on the right-hand side of the page. Click on that, and you can find a meeting near you. Please do try to make one of those meetings. They're really good meetings explaining the ARC and PLC decision, the farm program decisions that farmers and landowners will need to make. The takeaways are, roughly speaking, this. If you are a landowner, you have already received a letter in the mail from the Farm Service Agency that asks you to update your yield and your base acre information. So what you really need to do, and this is just a preliminary setup for the farm program sign up, they're really just looking to clean up data. And so what the FSA office wants you to do is to take a look at those numbers and say they look right, and then do nothing. But if they look wrong, call the FSA. And get them straightened out. And then coming later in the year, probably later this fall, you don't have to worry about it until after harvest. You may very well be asked to you will be asked to update those numbers officially. You may have to prove some things. FSA will talk to you about those. And then the ARC PLC sign-up won't come, we know, until after January 1 sometime, and could be as late as March. You don't need to worry about it too much. The takeaway from the conversations we're hearing at these meetings from Jonathan and from Gary is wait as long as you can to sign up, because you'll have more data and information to make a decision with. For most places in Illinois, and Gary believes probably most corn-growing states, so let's say the 12 states in the Midwest and Texas and other places, It's quite likely the sign-up will be for ARC County, not individual, but for county, and that you'll need to update both your base acres and your yields. Make sure the yields are the highest APH you can get. Base acres is a reallocation of the farms, the acres in the farms, and most likely you want to reallocate to as much corn as you possibly can. What that really means is that if you, over the last several years, have not had as high a base for corn as you did previously, don't update it. But if you have a higher base, update it. So those are a couple of the takeaways that come from the meetings, but you probably ought to look them up. We'll have a bigger meeting coming up in November. It's the 24th in Bloomington, Illinois at the Marriott. That's a Monday, the Monday before Thanksgiving, where we'll have Jonathan Kappas come in and talk about this ARC PLC decision. Gary Schnicke will be there to talk about crop insurance and the SCO part of the new program. If you happen to be in PLC, there are some reasons you might choose PLC, but the SCO will be available, and he'll talk about that and crop insurance. And we'll talk about land value with Bruce Sherrick at that point. Bruce is here on the University of Illinois. All three are ag economists. Bruce handles land values in the Center for Farmland at the University of Illinois. He'll be there, and we'll have a corn panel and a soybean panel. That one will cost $25. More information on that later. Put it in your schedule now so you have that in your schedule, that you can come to Normal, Illinois, to the Marriott on the 24th of November. My thanks to Scott Harms, to Pete Manhart, and to Sherman Newland for their time today. I do thank you guys, and I do appreciate you taking the time with us. And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. It was recorded, by the way, on the 28th day of August, a Thursday afternoon. Thanks, guys, for taking the time. And
thanks, Don.
All right.
Have a great one.